You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As always, I'm your host, another great edition of the show for you guys today. Joining me again this week, as always, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, Joe Mullinex. We're going to have him on in a minute, but first, some news, some bigger news, I guess kind of from both of us, but it has been a long 3 years at Grizzly Bear Blues, but it is now effective that I will be leaving there and moving on to, I don't know just quite yet, but it'll be mostly full-time podcast for Locked On Grizzlies. Don't know where the writing's going to end up yet, but really trying to focus on the podcast and the show, and so it just means that we'll have, you know, a lot more content on Locked On Grizzlies for you guys, but it's been a fun 3 years, and I know Joel's waiting to talk here, but it has been a long 3 years, but I know that Joe has given me a lot of good opportunities, and without him, obviously, I wouldn't even have this podcast. There wouldn't be anything. So Grizzly Bear Blues is a great place to really, you know, just kind of be yourself and write what you want to write, and Joe does a great job of that, of just making sure people are able to have their voice heard. So, you know, big news that, like I said, I'm going to be leaving Grizzly Bear Blues, going to be focusing on the podcast full time, going to be doing all my time with that. As most of you know, I have a family, I have another job. This is this is a hobby for me. This is not where I get paid from. So, between a full-time job and my family and Grizzly Bear Blues and the podcast, you know, something kind of has to give, and I've enjoyed the show this year. And so, just kind of a good step in the right direction. But anyway, Joe, I know you're waiting. What's going on, man? How are you today? I know that's, we wanted to do this. We wanted to announce that today. I did on the show so we could kind of talk about it, but also talk about basketball.
Sure. And we don't have to dwell on it, but I do want to say, I'd be remiss if I didn't say, you know, I've been doing this, you said 3 years of Grizzly Bear Blues. I think I've been doing this now, if my math is right, 7 years. I think I've been doing this 7 or 8 years over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com, going all the way back, obviously, to my time in Memphis, and, you know, been doing the podcast for multiple years now, and been the site manager for 3, going into my 4th season. And you don't get very many friends in this business. I've seen a lot of people kind of come and go, and I'm the only person left on the staff from when I joined GBB, and literally blogs have shut down and gone out of existence, and new ones have come and risen up. And I don't have very many friends in this business. Folks kind of leave your side and go do their own thing and that sort of stuff. And, you know, that's kind of life in general, the whole seasons and that sort of thing. But I consider you a friend, Mark, and I hope folks know that. And, nothing changes between us. Hopefully Mark will continue to have me on Locked On weekly. I'm happy to continue to do that. Mark will be a guest on our podcast and that sort of thing. And I view Mark not just as a friend, but as somebody, you know, I often, when I hype up GrizzlyBearBlues.com as a place where you can take advantage of opportunity and the platform that we provide. And Mark, to me, is just going to be another one of those alums like Kevin Leip, Jonah Jordan, you know, different types of folks that have had success leaving this place. And I'm sure you're going to be the exact same thing. So thank you for everything you did for GBB, Mark. It is appreciated. I look forward to your renewed focus on the podcast, and obviously, Courtney, your family. I'm sure they'll like you being a little bit more present in terms of what you do every day. I know how hard you work, and I appreciate everything you've done for me, and I'm going to miss you, buddy.
Yeah, it's going to be, it is, like I said, it's been a great 3 years. And I come into Grizzly Bear Blues, and I don't think a lot of people know this, but I came into it doing video and just kind of, we were working together in a different capacity. Whenever I was owning, I owned a company called Grizz Essentials back in 2014 and 2015. And so we kind of came together in a weird kind of start, and it kind of developed into something very different. But again, it's been fun, and I appreciate all my time there. And, like I said, nothing changes here. We'll still talk basketball every week. We'll still keep doing things. But for the podcast, you know, it'll just be more stuff. You know, going into the year, it'll be more audio with exclusive audio of players and one-on-one interviews and all that kind of stuff that you would expect from a show like this. So, but as much as I'd love to talk about me and you for 20 minutes, I know that's not what people listen to this show for. Let's talk about basketball. Where was to record this on Thursday night. Jonas Valanciunas decided to decline his option. Obviously, that's the news of the day. And we'll get to Taylor and Jenkins in a minute. But Jonas Valanciunas declining $17.6 million. What is your initial thoughts? And we'll get into the minutia of it and what we think might happen. What were your initial thoughts today when you saw that come through? Because I think we all expected it. You and I both were texting earlier and just assumed that it was a done deal. What were your initial thoughts?
I think it caught a lot of people by surprise. You know, I've had the opportunity to talk with several reporters and media folks in Lithuania. You know, one of the nice things about Grizzly Bear Blues is we are kind of a global site. So I've had a chance to develop relationships with reporters around the world. And obviously folks have interest in Jonas in that neck of the woods of the globe. And I talked to them today, kind of getting a feel for what they felt Valanciunas was going to do. And almost to a T, they said, again, unanimously, some had varying degrees of confidence, but they unanimously said that he was going to opt in. They thought that it made sense for him to take that $17.6 million and go from there. You know, the two-year extension on top of that player option, you know, they could maybe make it work so his per-year average was still comparable with players of his ilk in terms of skill set, production. You know, there's ways that you could have made it fit. The fact that he has not opted in and has chosen to opt out, it leads me to think one of two things is happening. Either Valanciunas believes that there is mutual interest, that Memphis wants to sign him to a long-term deal. And a long-term deal in this case, because I know you talked about this, Mark, on Twitter. I saw your exchange with a few folks. And we talked about this at Grizzly Bear Blues as well. If he wanted a three-year contract, that was possible. He could have opted into this and then gotten two more years. So to me, the only way that this really makes sense for him is if he's going for a four-year contract and if the Grizzlies are interested in potentially signing him to such a deal. I mean, theoretically speaking, and I would have to double-check the minutia of the collective bargaining agreement, excuse me, but I think since they have his bird rights, they could even perhaps sign him to a fifth year. So in terms
they could sign him to a five-year deal if they wanted to, yeah.
Right. So in terms of a long-term deal, he's not looking for 3 years. He's looking for at least four. And he's not opting out of that contract unless he thinks or knows that there is mutual interest from the Grizzlies. So that's one of the possibilities. And then the other thing that crossed my mind, which I think most Grizzlies fans are kind of accustomed to at this point, is that he just doesn't like Memphis and he wants to leave. Now, I do think that's the least likely option. Everything we've heard from a variety of sources tells us that he enjoys it in Memphis. Adrian Wojnarowski's article today explicitly says that his primary goal is to sign long-term with the Grizzlies. But as you know, Mark, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners do, sometimes you negotiate through the media. You can see with the Anthony Davis, Lakers, Pelican situation right now. So there were two schools of thought for me when I first heard the news. I think the most likely one is the idea that he has a long-term deal in his mind, and he's heard numbers or there's been speculation that is at least close enough to where he's comfortable opting out. Now, you can debate whether or not that's a good thing, and over at grizzlybearblues.com, if you check it out, I have an article called The Trial of Jonas Valanciunas where I do just that, and we have an internal debate over whether or not it should be a long-term investment for Jonas. But in terms of him actually not opting in, the only thing that really makes sense from what we've heard, what information we have in front of us, is he wants a long-term deal and the Grizzlies might be interested as well.
Yeah, I think that you made a good point, and it's the point that I made on the show that was released today, is that if he does want the money, let's just say he does want the 4 years, there is not a market that I think, and I think you probably agree, that Jonas – where he's getting $16 or $15 million a year, even if he goes into something like a 4 year, $12 million a year, that's roughly the same amount of money as opting in and taking a 2 year extension at 17 and 12 or something like that. So it was kind of that's what kind of stuck out to me. And like you mentioned, there's only two scenarios here where he firmly believes, either from the Grizzlies or from somewhere or from the agent, that he has the framework of a deal or something in place, or B, he just doesn't want to be here. And so we will see. And I think that, I think if you go to 15, I think that's too much money. I think, you know, looking at all the teams out there, we did a show on this on Monday where I went through every team, literally every team that had cap space and a need for a center. And we got down to about, I think it was 5 to 6 teams that actually could get the money at $10 to $12 million a year and had the need. And you look at that and you also have, you know, a couple of different centers. Vucevic is one that is open this year that's come as a free agent. So you have a couple of centers that are better than him. So you really limit the teams to, you know, maybe 3 to 4 teams. And, you know, if you add the Grizzlies in, that's maybe, you know, that's with the Grizzlies in there. So you don't have a whole lot of, there's not a whole lot of wiggle room there. I think he gave up a lot of his leverage. But I keep saying this over and over again that I think you can, I don't think he's a player that you go to 15 for. I think you can go out there and find a quality center that does what Jonas does for cheaper or the same price. What says you about the idea of if he wants 15, you let him, you know, letting Jonas walk and trying to go sign a different center or Harold re-sign Joakim Noah for $5 million a year? What says you about that?
I think you're right that 15 million is too much. And one of the reasons I have reached that conclusion is you have a center on the roster right now, and it depends on whether you think he's ready to be a center or not. And his name is Jaren Jackson Jr. In terms of long-term, I'm talking 5 to 7 years from now, Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to be the center of the Memphis Grizzlies, as long as they don't mess it up and he pulls an Anthony Davis and he wants to leave. Jaren translates as a modern five, and it makes a lot of sense to build a team around him with his ability to space the floor with a stretch four type, similar build if you want to do, you know, the interchangeable positionless basketball. But his rim protecting, his ability to switch and hedge out on the perimeter, he's a modern NBA five, and he could be pretty damn good at it. Now, what he struggles at is what Valanciunas is good at, and that's rebounding. And I think that that is where you see the physicality of Valanciunas' game being a positive addition to the Grizzlies that Jaren is not and will not be able to provide anytime soon. Could Jaren in 2024 be able to play the center position close to what Valanciunas does? Yes, but at the same time, he's just that much younger. He hasn't had that much time in the weight room. He hasn't had the physical development and the time to develop that way physically that Valanciunas has. So the argument for keeping Valanciunas is, to me, strongest when you point out the deficiencies of Jaren Jackson Jr. at that position. The counter to that is, now that you live in a world where you've essentially won the lottery, you know, you're one spot away from Zion Williamson, but you've gone from a debate over conveying a draft pick to having John Morant most likely arriving in Memphis soon. You know, that those are two completely different realities. And the fact remains, the priority should be putting talent around Jaren Jackson Jr. and John Morant that helps their development and prioritizes maximizing what they are going to be, because those are the two cornerstones of your franchise moving forward. Valanciunas is a good pick and roll partner with John Morant, theoretically. He's not a pick and pop partner like Jaren Jackson Jr. would be. Valanciunas can rebound extremely well, and we saw that in his limited sample size with the Grizzlies, but he can't defend on the perimeter the way that Jaren can. And if there comes a time, say you do sign Valanciunas to a 4-year contract, and by year 3 of this, hopefully the Grizzlies are back to competing for a playoff berth, and they're in the mix. Let's say they make the playoffs as the 7th seed in 2021, and you've got Valanciunas making $15, $16, $17 million a year sitting on your bench because he can't play in a playoff series against the Golden State Warriors or the Portland Trail Blazers or whoever it might be. So to me, that's the argument, counter-argument that's most fascinating, and it's centered around Jaren. On one hand, Jaren, you can certainly argue, isn't ready to play center on a consistent basis in the NBA. But the counter to that is, should that matter? Because at this point, you can add pieces around Jaren and Ja for the Mike Conley trade return, for obviously Valanciunas walking. Somehow, if you trade Mike and it's into cap space and you don't take a ton of money back, all of a sudden you've got money to spend in free agency in terms of cap space. So It really comes down to what you see Jaren being now as compared to 5 years from now. If you're worried about him being a center early on, then you probably are more amenable to offering Valanciunas closer to that ceiling that you mentioned there, $15 or $16 million. For me, the ceiling is $14 million, and I would front load the hell out of the thing. I would give him, because you have his bird rights, so you can go over the cap and get close to the luxury tax re-signing him. So I would almost give him what his player option would have been this year, because you were assuming he was going to take it anyway. Give him $17.6 million or whatever dollars. And then the next 2 or 3 years, he makes $10 or $11 million per. His per-year average is still comparable to what somebody of his production level would be, and yet it doesn't cap you out. It doesn't restrict you in terms of building around Jaren and Ja, which should be the priority here moving forward.
Yeah, I think that my cap for him is 12 million. Again, 14. That's not much. That's not that far from what we're thinking. So it's interesting that we both arrive at basically the same conclusion of what's too much, but it's for different reasons. And I think they're both pretty valid reasons. I think my point would be is if you want to play Jaren and your biggest deficiency, like you pointed out, is rebounding. I mean, it's really not that hard to go find a big center who can just really rebound the ball. That's all you really need to do is rebound the ball and be decent in the pick and roll. That's really not a whole lot to replicate. And so I think if you go out there, like you said as well, if you pay him over 15 or 15 and up, I think you get to year 3 and 4 and you're looking at, you don't really know what, you know, it looks like a really bad contract then. So, maybe he just wants 4 years and he wants it at $12 million. I don't know. Maybe he, who knows, but if they can somehow get 10, 12, maybe $13 million out of him per year, for 3 years, I think you sign that and it's fine. You got to have players and you got to have people. And I think that's perfectly fine. I think, like you mentioned, you get into a situation where you got a lot of money on the back end of a deal where he might not even be really, you know, in that rotation. That's when it starts to look, pretty glaring. Let's take a quick break. We will come back and we will talk about Taylor Jenkins. He was obviously hired as a new head coach. We'll talk about his press conference, get Joe's thoughts on Taylor as well. But make sure you go and download the new podcast app, Himalaya. It's super easy, super intuitive, and super helpful. You can subscribe to any podcast. Just go and subscribe to Locked On Grizzlies straight to the podcast app, Himalaya. It's a huge sponsor of this show, so appreciate that. Again, we'll be back right after the break. Welcome back to the show. Talking with site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, Joe Mullinex. Wanted to get into Taylor Jenkins with you a little bit. Obviously, that's the other big news from the week is he was hired on Tuesday. It was announced on, Wednesday. What was yesterday? Days are all running together for me. He thanked like 40 people at his press conference. That was interesting. we can't obviously know what's going to happen with Taylor Jenkins. He hasn't coached a game. But what were your initial reactions of all the things coming across Twitter, what you were seeing when you were seeing them, of what he was saying in that presser?
I loved his passion, and I do believe that people need to keep that perspective. When you see somebody break down like that, like he did on multiple occasions, talking about his family, talking about his basketball brothers or family, as he put it, you know, Coach Bud, who gave him his opportunities in Atlanta and Milwaukee. You know, oftentimes you can think that somebody's soft or weak when you see that. I don't think we see it as much or think it as much in 2019 in general as maybe would have 10, 15 years ago. There's still that section of sports culture that thinks it's soft to cry. And I've been around sports long enough to know that when you are doing that, A, you're comfortable with yourself, and B, you're passionate. And that passion really kind of shines through for me that he lives this. He believes he's doing what he's supposed to do with his life. And I can respect that a pretty good bit. And I really, really was happy to see that he was that excited to be there. Because as you know, Mark, and it's unfortunate, you have to overpay people like Chandler Parsons to come to the Memphis Grizzlies. You have to make trades usually to bring folks in. And that includes front office stuff too and coaching hires. You know, Memphis is not a place that people are clamoring to come to. So it's good to see somebody, and they're mistaken in that, by the way. I'm very excited to be back in Memphis myself next week. I miss it dearly. So it's one of those things that you take advantage of those types of folks that want to be there. And Jenkins seems to be one of those people. I also was really taken aback by how Tayshaun Prince was on the stage in a good way, how he spoke glowingly about Taylor Jenkins, because, and we've talked a little bit about this on your show, the way that they're building their front office and their organization, a bunch of smart dudes with Ivy League degrees and younger guys, that's not necessarily wrong. You look around any millennial 21st century corporation, you know, you can look at Amazon, look at Google. They're not far off in terms of building this in a similar fashion. Now, of course, the Grizzlies are a basketball operation, and that's where the importance of Tayshaun Prince comes in. Because if Tayshaun Prince is there and he can back up Taylor Jenkins and he can back up Zachary Kleiman and he can sit down with a Jaren Jackson Jr. after a frustrating practice, or likely a Ja Morant after a tough meeting with Kleiman about not taking enough threes or whatever the case might be, whatever the analytical data suggests, and he can say they're right and here's why, and can explain it from the player's perspective and why it's going to work and why that should matter, that just adds so much clout to what these guys are trying to do. So I really like Jenkins in terms of how he answered questions and the collaboration aspect, because again, that's where all these guys are going. More and more you hear collaboration across different levels. It's not like the Tom Thibodeau, my way or the highway. That's going the way of the dinosaur. But I was really impressed with how Tayshaun Prince was put up on a pedestal, shown to be more important, having a larger role in the organization, because he has to. That's the only way this is going to work. And
you gotta have somebody that knows something about basketball somewhere.
Right. That has the experience that players can relate to. You can know basketball. Like Taylor Jenkins never played college basketball. He didn't play in the NBA. I can point to countless examples, both in basketball and football, in all across sports, of people that didn't play at the highest levels who are tremendous coaches. You know, Buzz Williams at the coaching or at the college basketball level is a great example. One of the top coaches in the NBA or in college basketball, he didn't play college basketball. There's in the NFL, you know, there's all sorts of different guys who never succeeded at the highest level of the game, but they are tremendous coaches. You can have that be possible, but what you need to be cognizant of, and I think the Grizzlies front office is that especially if your roster is going to be young, you need to have people in place that can explain and add leverage and clout to what you are saying that have that experience, because without it, they're always going to have over you, how can you know you haven't been here? Tayshaun Prince has been there, and if he can say they're right and here's why, it instantly adds credit to whatever they're trying to convince these guys to do.
Yeah, I you're absolutely right. I mean, he seemed to me, and I said the word genuine, like he seemed like a genuinely good dude. Like I believed the things he was saying, like that. And I can't say that for a lot of times at JB's pressers, that there were a lot of times when he said things and I just didn't believe him, because I just didn't sound true. And he didn't look like he believed it. So, yeah, obviously that comes with a grain of salt, but he seems like a genuinely nice guy. You know, he seems like a family guy. And so that only goes a long way when you're a coach. You got to be good at coaching basketball. But I think that can come into play whenever you're, like you mentioned, trying to teach younger players the things they did right, the things they did wrong. People don't always take criticism well, especially young NBA players, especially for so long they've been the best player on every team, and a lot of times they come into these teams and they're not the best player anymore. And so taking criticism can go a long way, and I think he can help with that. Let's take one more break. We'll come back and finish up with Joe Monix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues. Talking with site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, Joe Monix. I want to finish up again with Taylor Jenkins. You mentioned Tayshaun Prince. They said that he was obviously heavily involved. He was taking a bigger role. I think that's a good thing. Something that also that stuck out to me, and I don't know if this you noticed this or whatever, but they seem to really have an idea that this is going to take some time. This is not going to be a turnaround. And they seem, Zach and Tayshaun and those guys, just from talking to them and from the outside looking in, it seemed like they know this is a rebuild where they want to, they're not going to say publicly, at least not while Mike's there, unless whether they say that or not. But they seem like they think they know this is going to take a minute.
When, even once they trade Mike Conley, which I think is even more likely now, after that press conference, they said all these nice things about Mike and never once said a thing about his future with the organization. So to me, they were selling what he could be to potential buyers. And apparently, if depending on the reports you believe, there's been 3 to 5 teams that have already contacted the Grizzlies. So it's one of those things that they're never going to say it's a rebuild, because that's not how you sell season tickets. You don't have season ticket, you know, reps calling people saying, come watch the rebuild at FedEx Forum. You're going to see a couple of cool dunks from John Moran as they get beat by 15. You know, that's not going to move a bunch of units. But Memphis fans are smart enough to know that once Mike Conley goes, and depending on the return for Mike Conley, it's not like they're trading Mike Conley for Bradley Beal. You know what I mean? It's not like New Orleans coming out and saying, we don't want to just rebuild, we also want to be good. You know, this is going to be Mike Conley for Justice Winslow in the number 13 overall pick, or this is going to be Mike Conley for Domantas Sabonis in number 18 overall. You're getting a piece that you see as a part of a core alongside Jaren and Ja, and then another draft pick. Maybe it's a future pick, not in this draft even, but the fact remains that you're going to need assets. And one of the nicest things about this Valanciunas situation is it puts you in a position to where, again, depending on how much money you take back in a Mike Conley trade, you can start being in the business of what Atlanta is doing and taking cap space that you're not going to fill anyway, because, again, as we mentioned in the previous segment, people aren't clamoring to come to Memphis as NBA free agents. They're just not.
Sure.
So you can take that cap space and use it to take on the bad contracts of other people in exchange for draft picks. And that is how the Grizzlies are going to build this thing long term, is through the draft. You can get a young 18, 19-year-old kid into Memphis, have them grow up here, have them get married here, have their first children there, and want to stay there long term if you build a winning culture. Mike Conley is the perfect example of that. He doesn't necessarily want to leave. He may want to leave now, but he didn't want to leave before. He grew up there, and essentially he became a man in Memphis. You connect through time and trade, and not through trade, but you connect through time in the draft and having somebody come up and go from being a teenage boy to a man in that city. That's where you get the emotional investment. That's where you plant roots. And you don't get that in free agency. You just don't. You don't get that via trade more often than not. You know, Zach Randolph being the one glaring exception to the rule. You have to build this thing from the ground up through the draft. And I do believe that they understand that. And I think that they understand that now that they've gotten Ja Morant, more than likely, to put next to Jaren, it's going to be a process where, A, they have to put as much talent that suits their skill sets as possible around them, and it's going to also have to take time. They're not going to be able to sign Klay Thompson and have him come in and fix this. That's not going to work. They're going to have to wait for Chandler Parsons to expire or use his contract to bring in a worse contract. I've suggested, and I know others have as well, Chandler Parsons for Nicola Batum and a draft pick. Why would Charlotte do that? Because Batum has a $27 million player option that he's probably going to opt into for next season. Not this season, the coming season, after this one. So if you don't want to pay that and you're Charlotte, what's that cost? What is that worth to you? Is that worth a first-round pick? If it is, then the Grizzlies should be willing to listen. Because if we're being honest with each other, you know, we can dream of Malik Beasley and Jaylen Brown and all these guys, but, you know, Boston's probably matching in restricted free agency. Denver's probably matching. And you're in a place where you're going to have to use the assets that you have. And they're in a place where they're, over the next couple of years, they're going to have some contracts coming off the books. And they can take that space, turn it into assets down the road, and acquire young talent in that way that they can hopefully build a culture around and get them invested enough that they're going to want to stay. And that takes time. It's not going to be a quick twitch kind of thing. it sounds like now more than ever, they understand that. That's the first step in any rebuild. The first step is acknowledging that you need a rebuild. And Chris Wallace wasn't willing to do that. And I believe Zachary Kleiman has been empowered. And it sounds like Taylor Jenkins has been as well, to be able to say, this is going to take time. They no longer have to feel pressured, like probably Chris Wallace did, to be fair to him, to keep his job and stay as competitive as he could. Now it's about how do we get this thing towards the, they said it a couple of times yesterday in the presser, sustained success. How do you get to sustained success? Well, in a place like Memphis, it's through the NBA draft. And if you're going to do it through the NBA draft, you better be patient because it's not going to happen overnight.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, cap space can be an asset. And so you have to utilize every tool at your disposal when you're a franchise, especially in a small market, and especially like the Memphis Grizzlies, because like you mentioned, there are only a few ways to build a franchise that operates and has sustained success in the NBA when you're a small market. And the draft and trades are the primary ways you can do that. And so they're going to have to use all their tools at their disposal. Again, make sure you go out and get the new podcast app, Himalaya. You can subscribe to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast straight to there. It's super easy, super intuitive music, and you can make all curated playlists of all your favorite podcasts right on the new podcast app, Himalaya. As you mentioned, next week, you're going to be in town, my man. We're going to hang out at the draft party over at the Bluff Grizzly Bear Blues 92.9, having a draft party over there. So I guess we should just do this show together in person next week. I guess that's the only logical answer, right?
I'm down. I've got a few different things that I have simmering, so to speak, in terms of appearances and things like that. But no, I can always make time for you, Mark. Let's do it in person. Sounds good to me.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate it. And we will, we'll talk again next week.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mark, for everything. GVB is going to miss you, but Locked On's got a good one here. Hopefully folks will continue to subscribe and listen to this awesome podcast. So thank you, Mark, and I'll see you next week.
Appreciate it, man.